From UFOs to ghosts and government cover-ups, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now, or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
And I'm Ben. As always, we are joined in the studio today with our super producer, Noel the Sandman Brown.
Hello.
Do you like that, Sandman?
Yeah,
I worked on that one.
I'm a fan of the Sandman.
Yeah. And most importantly, ladies and gentlemen, you are here, and that makes this Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. And today, we talked briefly on it off air. There's only one way we can start this show. That's with a story.
So, a recurring theme for me when I'm sleeping sometimes, I guess you'd call it a recurring nightmare or dream, I have this sense that I'm floating in a giant body of water, and I just have this overwhelming sensation that there's something much, much larger than me underneath me. And it's not necessarily like something that's going to devour me. It's just a sense of like feeling small, kind of, and insignificant. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'll wake from this and that feeling will kind of stay with me. And it's not exactly a kind of paralysis, but it's just this, it carries over from sleep into waking. And then I'm sort of like stuck with that, and I experience it even when I'm awake, and it's almost this feeling of not being fully awake and sort of still being in that space.
As though a dark, gigantic eye opens in the abyss beneath you.
Yeah, and I mean, what I compare it to is, you know, maybe like a whale or just some sort of, I've always kind of been freaked out by things that I can't see, things that lie just beneath the surface, and, you know, nothing represents a larger, unseeable, unknowable world than the ocean or, you know,
right,
the water.
Yeah.
And so that's something that's always stuck with me, and it comes back pretty often.
Yeah, the Leviathan is a very powerful and scary thing to experience. What about you, Matt? You got one?
Oh, yeah, I can relate to that feeling, especially being in the ocean, but I've not really experienced it much in a dreaming state. I had a story about my wife, because we recently experienced this, or she recently experienced it. I guess, why don't I tell that story after we actually talk about what it is?
Right. Yes. So we're talking a little bit about nightmares, and it's strange that there are some nightmares that occur more often in one culture than another. There are some nightmares that seem weirdly specific. A lot of people have nightmares related to their teeth crumbling, yeah, or falling out, or having to do stuff with other people's teeth. So a nightmare at heart is what is called a parasomnia. And so a word of today, right? Like the time when we learned that other, what's that word for fake it? Suicide, right?
Yeah.
When you fake your own suicide, mm-hmm. Which we didn't know was a thing. So the word like that is parasomnia, or sleeping disorder. A nightmare is a kind of parasomnia, and nightmare is a weird name when we think about it, right? It's like two words. What does it mean? Like night horse?
Kind of.
It's just, is it scarier? What it originally meant was this idea of an evil incubus or succubus afflicting sleepers with a feeling of suffocation.
Yeah. An incubus would be the male version, mm-hmm. that generally attacks females. And the succubus is the female, I think.
Definitely.
Sit on top of you and steal your breath sometimes, or just asphyxiate you.
Suck out your soul, right? I mean, that's sort of the image that I associate with.
Yeah, exactly.
It,
you know. Sap your life energy, mm-hmm. right? And drink your milkshake.
Don't do that.
Your precious bodily fluids.
Yeah, exactly. And so when we look at this, now when we say, oh, I had a nightmare, I had a nightmare where I was walking down a hallway when there was nothing but shutting doors. And then, you know, I kept hearing someone just around the corner singing Lionel Richie's Hello. I'm making this up. This didn't happen to me. but that sounds like it might be not that scary. But
Hello, it's me. That's a different Hello song.
There are a lot of Hello songs. But the The point is that Nightmare once upon a time described a very specific type of unpleasant dream, and it's the thing we're talking about today. We're talking about, before we give the scientific term, let's just talk about the myth of this idea of this unwanted visitor coming to find you in the night. So we know it goes across different cultures, right?
Oh, yeah, sure. One of the things I found was reference that some people attribute to this type of thing, another entity visiting a human in the night, goes back to the Bible. And it comes from Genesis 6, 1 through 4. The one in particular that I was looking at was the New International Version. It says, "When the sons of God saw that the daughters of men were beautiful, and they married them, any of them they chose." And it speaks about them going to the daughters of men and having children with them. And some people attribute this to being like a spirit or a, you know, an angel, mm-hmm, perhaps, mm-hmm, coming and visiting a woman in the night. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Nephilim. Yeah, and we also hear in other times, you've heard people, like, you remember the black cat thing?
Mm-hmm.
Like that cats would sit on the chest of someone, especially babies, and suck out their breath.
There's a fear of black cats in multiple parts of the world for many different reasons too.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
I adopted a black cat, and at the Humane Society, they said they don't adopt them out around Halloween because people tend to do terrible things to them.
And your cat's awesome.
My cat's great.
Aww. What's your cat's name?
Maybe.
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 As in, maybe Bloof?
Yeah.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
As in, maybe you're right.
Oh.
Maybe I'm crazy.
As in, maybe we should move on.
Okay, so another reference that I found, and specifically it was from this production called The Entity, which aired on, I think, Channel 4 on the BBC, but it was made in association with TLC and a couple other companies. But anyway, they put a quote from Horace from the first century BC at the beginning, at the very top of the episode they created. And it is, quote, "When doomed to death, I will attend you as a nocturnal fury. I will attack your faces, and brooding upon your restless breasts, I will deprive you of repose by terror." That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, that's cool.
I mean, and I'm sure you've got other examples, but it just seems to me to be a very striking image that could find its way into lots of different cultures. Just the idea of being asleep, completely having your guard down, and being just totally vulnerable to whether it be spirits, whether it be physical visitors in the night intending to do you harm. Mm-hmm. I mean, sleep is a pretty unique situation in that respect, you know.
And this podcast ties into some strange parts there, because we're also going to talk about reality, which I know can be such a difficult thing to talk about. And we might spin in a few circles, but what is the nature of reality? Plato's cave, all that stuff, perception, physicality.
None of this is real, man.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what people are telling me in most of my hallucinations, even the not really vivid ones, even just like the whispers when I'm walking by the microwave. Mm-hmm. Anyway, moving on. So the, one thing we need to talk about is the idea of shadow people. We have talked about the different ways cultures interpret the same common symptoms, right? Mm-hmm. Like an inability to move, except for maybe the eyes. Difficulty breathing, hallucinations, a sense of a presence, and very strong emotional reactions to that presence.
Yeah, there are even things like tingling that sometimes will, or a sense of tingling, or electricity in the air or in the body, as the feeling that you're unable to move starts to occur. I've read a lot about that. A couple other things. Oh, sounds. I didn't realize that auditory hallucinations were such a large part of this.
Yeah, yeah, auditory hallucinations. It's strange because every sense that people have, and there are more than five, can have some sort of hallucinatory aspect occur. It's just your body giving you different information.
So these are waking nightmares. Is that correct?
Yeah, because your body is somewhere in this limbo between the worlds, you know?
Well, and it's like I said at the top of the show with my dream, it's sort of, I mean, it's not this extreme, but it's something that's recurred enough that it's meaningful to me. This sense this feeling of being tiny and insignificant mm-hmm. and being dwarfed by some sort of mammoth unseen being is obviously something that resonates with me. And when I awake, I still, that stays with me to the point that I, you know, am very much still in that dream headspace, even though I'm awake. Yeah. So it's not exactly a waking nightmare like we're describing here, but I think it's along the same lines, at least as far as my experience goes.
You know, yeah, it's a very strange thing. Have you guys ever had a really intense nightmare where you wake up out of it and then you know that if you go back to sleep, you'll be back in that world?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And then you don't go back to sleep. You put on something nice like Fallout 3.
Fallout 3.
Yep. That's what one does, right?
I think I may have grown out of that a little bit. I definitely remember that from when I was younger. There was a time where I was absolutely terrified by the movie It. And that was one I remember just having such a hard time with, where I would have these nightmares and then I would wake up and I would have to stay up all night watching the Flintstones on Cartoon Network just to calm myself down, because I made the mistake of watching It when I was too young. And God, if I've watched that movie recently, and it's just awful. It's not scary at all. But man, it scared the crap out of me when I was a kid. Hey, maybe that's an unpopular opinion, but
the book was scary. I thought Tim Curry did a great job.
No, he did a fine job, but I mean, there's so many things that you can, that you can't do in a 1990s
made for TV
serial miniseries.
I don't care what you say. Every time I look at one of those little runoff sewer grate things, I see his face.
Well, they float.
I just imagine that I see his face.
Yeah.
And there, everybody floats.
And let's be honest, it doesn't matter who is talking to you from inside a sewer.
Yeah, just like nonchalantly, hey.
The more well-known they are, the less cool it is. It doesn't matter if
you're right. That is a pretty striking image where he just kind of nonchalantly just sort of like pops up out of there, and the kid just talks to him like it's everything.
Yeah, Elliot, if you guys, don't get me wrong, if one of us were trapped in a sewer, or even more creepily, just nonchalantly said, yeah.
To the kid's credit, he does sort of be like, how'd you get down there?
Yeah, But the strange thing about these nightmares, these disquieting things, this line between what is real and what is just imagined, came to a head with a short story I'd like to tell you guys in place of an actual nightmare thing. So in 2001, on an episode of one of my favorite radio shows, Coast to Coast AM, this guy named Art Bell had a guest on, and their conversation wandered over to this notion of shadow people, murky and distinct hazy things seen at the edge of vision, often walking all crazy like the person in the ring. Listeners, you can't see it, but I'm doing a pretty good physical impression.
Yes, he is.
And what they found was that so many people who had never thought this experience happened to anyone else found out that it happened all the time. Well, I'm exaggerating, but it happened often. So they started writing in with their pictures of shadow people and this descriptions of these demons, these ghosts, these extra dimensional beings, and this similar set of symptoms. So here's the question, right? Putting aside whether it's real, not real, how could so many people experience the same thing? I mean, were they making it all up?
That's a possibility, but it could also just be how our brains function, right? And how we interpret things and try and make faces out of nothing, just because it's an evolutionary advantageous for us to do that.
I remember the term night terror. So it's sort of like a distinction between just a run-of-the-mill nightmare and a night terror that actually like affects you physically. I mean, that's what this strikes me as. And I mean, I understand this need to insert some sort of boogeyman into something that's so traumatic like that. I think you're right. I think it is just the way our brains kind of fill in the gaps. I mean, is there something legit supernatural going on here? I can't say, but it's interesting to think about.
It's a possibility, and it is something that many people believe. That there is, I mean, again, for thousands of years now, it has been written about these, you know, beings that perhaps were just named different things throughout culture. Because if we are all experiencing the same thing because of our brain, then perhaps we're just applying what we know to what we are seeing, right, or hearing.
Right. Like UFO visitation stories have a whole lot in common with old stories from fairy tales of changelings and abducted children and visits in the night. You're right, though, that whether it's a demon, a witch, a shadow, a black cat, a ghost, etc., they all have the same things in common. And what's interesting about this is that this is not just a bunch of folklore or just a bunch of anecdotes or old wives' tales or opinions. We were talking about this earlier, and that's what our video was about this week. Noel, what does the world of science recognize this as?
So scientists call this phenomenon sleep paralysis. And it's one of these things that, despite there being so many reports of it and it being clearly relatively widespread, they're just not quite sure what causes it. And that's what's fascinating to me about it. So there's actually quite a few theories about it, though. One of them being that it's an overlap in stages of REM and waking cycles. Another is that it represents mismatched neural functions, out of balance neural functions.
Okay.
And sleep deprivation is another one, or disturbance of routine sleep patterns. And I mean, I can speak to sleep deprivation. Definitely some crazy things can happen when you don't get enough sleep.
Yeah, that's another thing. There is a particular group that also reports seeing shadow people, and those are methamphetamine addicts.
Woo!
after a long time
a bender
riding the rails. Mm-hmm. Yeah, bender.
Jeez. I mean, I know that if I stay up all night, maybe one night, and then don't get enough sleep the next night, I always refer to myself as being a little punchy, you know, where I'm kind of just like, my brain's not firing on all cylinders, you know, and more so than usual. And I'm much more likely to kind of fall into sort of almost like a weird fugue state, you know? And so
yeah.
I can imagine that you take that and multiply it, it could be pretty intense.
Yeah, that's all I know now. So,
oh, that's right. What's it like,
weird.
Matt? Tell
it's
us about
weird.
It, sir.
I definitely get the corner of your eye when you move.
Who's in the room now?
Yeah, I get that feeling way too often now. And it's not just because I'm aware of at least what's happening chemically in my brain. Mm-hmm. I'm aware that that's the issue, right?
So wait, but this also was something that was close to you. This was this suggestion came to the group because this is something you wanted to look into, right?
Yes. So not long ago I watched The Nightmare, which is a documentary available on Netflix. Mm-hmm. It was directed by Rodney Asher,
who also did the Shining documentary.
Yes, Room 237,
which is also,
ooh,
I mean, it's
just all tangentially related to our show in this beautiful way. So I just happened upon it. It was on my suggested things to watch, and man, it was great. It was, you know, it's been touted. If you looked at the trailers, like, this is the scariest movie that's happened.
Sort of a hybrid
decades.
Kind of film. Like, it's a documentary, but it has some production elements.
It has some reenactments.
Dude, they did a great job of doing some reenactments, yes. But really, it's just the stories themselves of all of these people that they interviewed for the film who have experienced this type of thing, specifically where you are experiencing sleep paralysis, where you're body, you believe that you are in your body, you are awake in your room or wherever you're sleeping, and these entities are visiting you.
Mm-hmm.
And they mean most of the time to do you harm. Anyway, I just watched that, and Diana, my wife, and our new son, they were asleep in the room with me, but they had been asleep for a long time, so I was like, I think I can watch this now, and it won't be a big deal. We watch it. Well, last week, Diana had an experience of her own with this, with sleep paralysis, and it's something that I have never experienced before in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And sadly, I was a little jealous that she got to experience it, even though it is a horrifying – when you're in that moment, it is a horrifying thing. I imagine, at least from the film, The Nightmare, it seems freaking horrifying and terrible.
I mean, it sounds like getting waterboarded or something.
It's just awful.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, so anyway, she experienced it. And I just asked you guys if you wanted to do this, and that's why we're here.
So, Diane, if you're listening to this, we hope you're doing well, and we'll try to do justice to this. Also, other people who have experienced this. Before we go any further, we need to talk a little bit about REM, the band or the dream sequence. It's up to you guys.
Talk about the passion.
Okay, we'll talk about the passion.
All right.
Yeah, so rapid eye movement, one of the things that happens when you are asleep, and if you are a child sleeping, you will have this much more often than you will as an adult. Kids just dream more. And, you know, there's something kind of like touchy, weird about that. But what we find when we talk about the way nightmares and REM sleep interact. Noel, you said a really interesting thing with the idea that sleep cycles might be happening out of order, mm-hmm. essentially, right? So,
or together, right? Overlapping.
Mm. And in a time when maybe they should be consecutive waves in and out. So REM sleep starts with a signal from a thing at a neighborhood at the base of your brain. If your brain is a city, your brain has a neighborhood way in the back called the pons. And these signals travel to the thalamus, and that goes to the cerebral cortex. Cerebral cortex is like the hot, important part of town. It's where all the colleges are, right?
It's where the Soto Sopa.
Right. I hope it's a little better than that.
Well, I mean, it helps you get a Whole Foods.
Oh, gosh. Any South Park fans in the audience?
I need some Curious Fusion Delights. Sorry. That's been my thing I've been saying.
You say that sometimes.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry to take us away. Ben, take us back. I'm sorry.
Bring it back, man. Reel it in.
So the cerebral cortex is going to be the part of your brain responsible for organizing the things you learn. Organizing the things you think, enabling your thought process. So when this REM sleep occurs, the pons is sending signals that shut off neurons in the spinal cord, causing a temporary paralysis of the limb muscles. That's why when you have dreams, whether they're happy or sad dreams, and you're running your ass off,
you're
laying prone, usually.
Mm-hmm.
But if that delicate balance is disturbed,
then you have all kinds of issues you could have. You could just be sleepwalking. That's something that's how it manifests sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You could be like my dog, where my dog is fast asleep on the couch and just running, like the limbs are physically moving.
Have either of you ever sleepwalked before?
Yeah.
I have not.
I used to a lot when I was younger. Like I actually did it, went to my neighbor's house.
Whoa.
I mean, seriously. And, you know, I wonder what the distinction there is. Like, why?
What did you do?
I think I knocked on the door and I was wrapped in a blanket and they, you know, answered the door and were like, hey, that's weird. Go
that's
home.
Awesome.
Go home, kid.
How old were you?
I guess probably, you know, 6 or 7, something like that. One time I peed in my dad's drawer.
Dude, okay.
That's spooky.
Wow. This just brought, I have sleepwalk.
Mm-hmm.
So my dad used to listen to records on headphones down in the living room.
Uh-huh.
And apparently one night I walked down while my dad was just sitting on the floor. He was just sitting on the floor with his hands on his head, laying back, listening to some, I don't know, probably Eagles. It was probably Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked over and just peed right onto his speaker. Huge, like these big speakers. They weren't even in use. I just peed right on them. I don't even know how old I was.
Guys, I'm sorry to say I've never done any sleepwalk.
Any night micturating?
Yeah, exactly. Excellent word. But the strange part of this is that we still don't completely understand REM sleep, and you might get out of it and be in this stage of somewhere between waking and sleeping, and your body still thinks it's supposed to be shut down. But you have opened your eyes in the real world. You've violated some fundamental law that fiction writers seem to make up whenever they do a dream world story.
And well, yeah. And then so as those two systems are overlapping, it may be causing you to see things, but overlaid on top of your actual room, right? And that's why this stuff is so terrifying, because your brain really believes that it's there.
Mm-hmm. So now we've answered a little bit of the scientific stuff behind the folklore, right? When we come back, we're going to take a closer look at maybe the more esoteric, abstract, one might even say paranormal things involved. But first, a word from our sponsor. And we are back. So we talked about the science. We talked about some personal revelations, some experiential things about nightmares. Let's talk about sleep paralysis itself. I pulled up some numbers I want to walk you guys through. So just to get a sense of the magnitude, you'll hear estimates saying anywhere from 2 to 8% of the population experiences sleep paralysis. So if we just took the number 6%, right, which is one I saw in a couple of different studies out of Stanford, then what we see is that as of 2015, if there are more than 7.3 billion people on the planet, and that means that even with the lower estimate, nearly like 440 something million people experience sleep paralysis. It's larger than the population of the US.
It really makes you understand why when Art Bell made that show, they got so many images of people sending in like, hey, this is what it looks like and what it feels like.
Yeah. Yeah.
What kind of images?
Of what they had experienced as shadow people or entities.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. They drew these. Mm-hmm. These were,
I see.
They weren't supposed to, I think, there were probably a few alleged photographs, mm-hmm. but with that point, with over 400 million people experiencing things that they explain in the, such a similar way, what gives, you know, in the guy who made the documentary, was Rodney Asher.
Mm-hmm.
He said that was one of the more interesting questions to him. Not necessarily the forefront of the science behind this, but why it was so similar, you know?
I mean, and admittedly, the science is pretty murky at this point.
Yeah, there are questions that remain unanswered. You know, there's every time on this show or other shows, every time someone at How Stuff Works starts to tangle with the dream world, we quickly learn that most people say it's probably this or maybe that, but I don't know.
Well, yeah, yeah. And the underlying belief structure of a culture, honestly, that is the main way to explain something like this a lot of time.
Something occurred to me. I know this is probably pretty intense to think about for you especially, but crib death. Like, you know, did you ever read that Chuck Palahniuk book, Lullaby?
Mm-hmm.
It was all about like this African spirit that causes the infants to, you know, pass away in their cribs. I just wonder if there's any connection between this idea of sleep paralysis and demons or whatever. If that's like an infant's version of experiencing that. Cause think about it. I mean, like if it's that bad for an adult, can you imagine if something like that happened to an infant?
You know, that's an interesting proposition because there are two myths that tie directly to concepts of infant mortality that I think of just when you say that. And the first is the black cat myth, and that the cat would attack a child, right? We know that one. And that's the one where a cat, for some reason, gets on top of a baby in a crib and sucks its breath out, right?
And or in reality, sits on its face and probably just suffocates it with its body.
Which could happen. This took a dark turn, my friends. The other one would be, of course, those old stories of changelings. That was a way for people to interpret that kind of situation. You know, like they have a kid that's healthy, then they have a kid who's not, then it must have been some sort of intervention by unnatural forces. So this brings us to one of the bigger questions. Oh, wait. Before we get to that, guys, I gotta say, I think in our notes here, it says there's a part where I wanted to complain about the video script.
Mm-hmm.
I had a tough time writing this one.
That's what you were saying. I don't see it.
I had a tough time writing this.
It's great. I don't know.
Well, if you check out the video, listeners, go easy on it. The editing will, as always, be fantastic and the production will be great. But, if at some points there you go, I don't know. It's kind of weak. Then it's my fault, not Matt or Noel's.
Huh.
I just want to be clear on that.
I think you're a little too hard on yourself. This is an interesting topic, though, and it's a little out of the norm, you know, for the show. So I applaud you for attacking it with such aplomb.
We had a lot of people get upset that we covered Slender Man, even when we said Slender Man's not real and was invented in 2009.
Yeah, they were mad because we were listening to our younger viewers. That's I would say the comment that we get the most.
But I didn't
start
know.
Listening to your younger viewers, man. Why don't you do something about Doge?
About what?
A dog thing?
It's a dog meme.
I don't know.
I don't, well, that's the thing. Like, I don't know the age of someone who writes to us unless they tell us.
You know, sure, I mean? Exactly.
And we try to cover as much as we can. We have a backlog. And not everything's going to be successful, but I bring up Slender Man because we've been exploring mythology in this weird way and folklore. And that brings me to like the biggest question that I have to ask you guys. Do you think these kind of things are real, or that there's some way to encounter another entity, through your brain?
It takes me back to the pineal gland. That's what I think about.
Yeah.
Because, I believe melatonin is released from the pineal gland. Mm-hmm. I believe that's correct. I'm not a scientist. That's what I found in my notes. I don't know. Somebody, Emery, shoot me a note. Anyway.
Yeah. You're right.
So that the idea that there is an idea that the pineal gland seated in the center of your brain is somehow this gateway to other dimensions or the spirit realm or whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps this is a way that we could get into communication with other things if they exist. I tend not to believe that that is the truth, but I don't think there's anybody currently trying to write a thesis paper about that.
I think at the end of the day, we're all working with the same equipment. You know, and so when certain wires get crossed and things, you know, chemicals are out of balance, it can produce similar results. I mean, look at people describing hallucinogenic experiences, for example, taking, you know, psychedelics.
Oh, shout out to Graham Hancock and the Machine Elves, you guys. That's a thing.
That's a real thing.
Oh, cool. I'll show myself out.
Please. I don't have any specifics right off the bat, but I mean, in reading people's, you know, descriptions of mm-hmm. their trips or whatever, there are a lot of similarities. There are a lot of things that are experienced very similarly. So I just wonder if the fact that many people report similar sleep paralysis, you know, apparitions appearing to them. Like I said, we're working with the same equipment. If the wires are crossed in a similar way, would it produce similar results?
Oh, yeah. You know, that's interesting because we can make, I mean, human experimentation is still pretty limited in this day and age, but we could do some interesting things if ethics weren't involved.
You monster.
I'm just saying.
Oh my God.
What? No, I'm just, it just has
just
to.
Saying.
It
just spitballing here, guys.
I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do surgery on people's pineal glands, you guys, and hallucinogens. That's crazy. It's interesting, though. I'm just saying it's interesting. There's a lot to learn.
Oh, yeah, sure. I'm just really fast. I wanted to come up with some of the ideas of what people who do experience this have attempted to do to make it stop.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of things if you consult, let's say, a therapist or a psychologist and you say, hey, I'm experiencing this at night. I'm feeling paralyzed and I mm-hmm. see shadow people. I know that sounds crazy. What can I do? You're going to be told, well, we need you to eat a little more healthily. We need you to get more sleep, not use, you know, your cell phone or other electronic devices right before you go to bed. All these different things of lifestyle changes. And going back to even 2002 in that Entity documentary, people who experience this express how difficult it is to hear that because a lot of times it doesn't really help that much.
Hmm.
Perhaps it will alleviate the symptoms slightly, but it's almost it feels like a dismissal, at least is what it seems from these people who are interviewed. Like, it's not real. Look, chill out.
Well, and are these people just cool as cucumbers in their day-to-day lives, or do they struggle with some serious anxiety?
I would say at least these are the two main documentaries I watched, The Nightmare and The Entity. Mm-hmm. It seems to fluctuate. So there was one guy who says he experiences it almost every night. He's unable to, it's affected him where he can't keep down a regular job. He can't really do much of anything. His social world is just all messed up because at night he's just terrified.
So you would almost argue that his daily anxiety is as a result of these night terrors.
It could be a
not
feedback
the other way
loop.
Around. Right, right, right. That's what I just wonder if folks with intense anxiety issues that affect them every day are more prone to having these nighttime anxiety experiences.
Or they could be real.
It's a possibility. Honestly, it is.
It's, well, that's the thing. If we're talking just in terms of rhetoric and technicalities, then there's always the out where we can say, well, perhaps there's just, since we don't know if these things were to exist, we don't know what substance they would be formed of. We don't have a way to measure whatever constitutes them, right? So it is possible that we just don't have the technology, but then it's also probable that it's not necessarily a haunting. I love horror movies, you guys, and I love watching movies with a lot of heavily implied mythology. I will say I myself have never experienced sleep paralysis in the way that I hear it depicted in these sorts of things, you know. I guess I should be fortunate in that regard, but when we talk about the nature of reality, we're talking about whether you find your experiences true. Is that the ultimate thing you can trust, or do you trust what other people tell you about their experiences or experiences of humanity at large? You know what I mean?
Or can you even trust what you see and hear sometimes, because we know that your brain plays tricks on you?
One of the strangest episodes we did, which is also a difficult one, was about the flat earth theory. I think that's the one where it ends and there's clearly, guys, okay, the earth is not a perfect sphere, but it is a sphere.
It's not a disc.
It's not a disc, yeah. And there's a group of people, the vast majority are people who are sort of trolling, and they call themselves a Flat Earth Society, but their belief is, or the shtick, is that with the right rhetorical tools, you can argue anything. And I get that. I mean, I'm not excited about it, but that's a real thing.
I like the idea.
I like the idea. And then there are very few people who do actually believe that the Earth is flat. And I was reading, you know, I was doing the research on this, and one person said, oh, yeah, astronauts have been there. How much do you trust astronauts? Do you know any astronauts?
Yeah. I think that was what we included.
I used that, yeah, because I didn't know what else. Like, it was just such a great question, you know, because I don't know any astronauts.
Right? It's completely true, but at the same time.
It's not plausible.
Yes.
So with that in mind, we haven't dug all the way into altering reality via hallucinogens. And I think that's a very good conversation for us to have. And I want to know if listeners, if we've talked a little bit about the science, right? But I want to know if you out there listening have had an experience like this that you believe cannot be explained by some sort of wonky hiccup in your sleep cycle or another mundane thing.
Right. The chemical imbalance of some sort.
Yeah, and if you have had that, what is your explanation for what it is?
Mm-hmm.
I really want to know that. Some of the hypotheses that were put through in the nightmare were, there's one of the people said they think perhaps this might be some sort of visitation from beings from another dimension.
Mm-hmm.
Another person said, well, what if people who are experiencing this are somehow getting the raw data from the world, from this reality or whatever it is that most people can't process, and they can't process the full raw data of what they're seeing. That is the, by the way, that last one is the guy who can't hold down a job.
Well, that's the kind of thing people talk about with the hallucinogens, you know, is this sense of a flood of data and information that you can't perceive when you're not in that state.
Yeah, there's too much.
Yeah.
By the way, I can we talk about one specific thing that happened in the Nightmare documentary?
Sure.
It was that guy. He said that he was asleep in his bed. This is a spoiler if you want to watch the documentary, and I highly recommend that you do. He says he was sleeping in his bed, and there were two females sleeping in the bed with him. He was on one side and then two girls. He says that he got the sleep paralysis, or it affected him, and he couldn't move. He saw a huge 8-foot black figure standing over him, had red eyes, and was speaking to him and saying things like, "You don't know me, but I know you, but you know who I am," like really strange, mm-hmm. cryptic, but, and almost contradictory statements. And he was terrified. He couldn't move. Then all of a sudden the girl next to him shot up out of bed, screaming, at least according to this guy, this is his story. And she just, I guess it woke him up and knocked him out of it. What she said she saw was a black cat sitting on her chest with red eyes speaking in some other language to him. At the same time, he believes he's seeing this giant 8-foot character mm-hmm. talking to him. I don't know. That to me is fascinating. The idea that two people could experience something very strange, but so similar at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'd like to hear stories about that. There's another thing I want to posit there.
Wait, Ben, I'm sorry. No, I don't mean to interrupt you, sure. But should we keep that in? I feel like maybe I was just telling too much of the movie.
What, with the two?
Yeah. The story is an anecdote from a film.
No, we should totally keep that in.
I mean, I don't know. It's interesting, but it just sounds like some tweaker stuff to me.
Oh, really?
A little bit. I mean, what's he doing in bed with the two chicks in the first place? And,
right.
And this is the guy that can't hold down the job. I'm sorry. Huh. I shouldn't.
I agree with Noel here. I feel like you're right, man. There are some missing plot points.
Okay. In this. All right. Look, I'll give you that. It makes for a good story?
It makes for a good story. Alright, so there is, there's this strange debate about how many senses we have. We have so many other strange senses that don't quite get the superstar status of the main five, right? Like the main cast. So I'd like to do an exercise. Ladies and gentlemen listening to the podcast, we'd like to do an exercise with you now if you're in a safe place. We want you to turn out the lights. Go to the darkest place you can find physically, not emotionally. Don't get weird with it. And, okay, are you there? All right, close your eyes and take your right hand with your eyes closed. Start with it straight out at your side as though you're trying to lean to a wall on your right. And then with your palm up, move your hand slowly in front of where your field of vision would be if your eyes are open. You're in the dark. You have your eyes closed. But according to several different studies, 50% of you will be able to somehow see your hand, or you will think that you see your hand, because your body has a sense of its own where it exists in space, right?
Well,
not necessarily everybody, but basically Daredevil. What that study says is people basically have Daredevil-esque powers. And this is interesting to me because it then means that you could have, I don't know about you guys, but I've had this slippery moment where I feel like my whole body has slipped away where I think, oh, okay, it's time to get working on the show. Matt and Noel and I are meeting up, so let me get up and I'm brushing my teeth. I'm putting on my pants and then I'm eating some cereal or something. I'm kidding. I don't have my life together enough to handle breakfast. And then I realized that I've been in bed the entire time. I'm just laying there and I started thinking about what I had to do and slowly started slipping back into dreaming about it.
Yeah. I've done that before when I snooze, hit the snooze button when I shouldn't have.
My dreams aren't that organized.
Oh man.
If any of my dreams were work appropriate, I would tell a real one.
Really fast before we get out of here, guys, I just want to say there's a ton of research you can do on your own about this stuff. There are all kinds of books. One of my favorite ones about this idea of hallucinating is called Hallucinations by Oliver Sacks. Fascinating book. Diana has a whole host of his books. Just dealing with what happens when weird things happen in the brain. Really great stuff. Another one was, it's actually called Sleep Paralysis by Shelley Adler, who's someone that Diana knew as well. That's my wife, everybody. If you're
smart gal.
Yeah. She's really smart. I think that's really, I just want to say there are all kinds of books, there are all kinds of places online if you are suffering from this that that can at least try to help you out, and there are forums you can go to and discuss with other people who are.
It's a serious thing.
And I would I would like to say, for my part, I am not diminishing this experience. I believe that people can have all kinds of experiences, and just because we don't share them does not make them any more or less real. So if this is happening for you and this is something that you're struggling with, let us know. We're interested in hearing about it. And I just hope at no point during this episode that I come off as being flippant about it.
Right. Especially if this is the verdict is, so far, the scientific consensus, I should say, is that this is not something that will physically harm you. However, this can be emotionally traumatizing. And there are people who have reported being physically harmed by what they believe.
Like psychosomatic, right?
Possibly, but they believe that they have been, assaulted, like punched or scratched. And guys, we've all drank too much in our 20s, and younger listeners, have some adventures ahead of your time. People have woken up with a, how did that get there, kind of bruise before. You know what I mean? And just because we don't know where something came from doesn't mean that it automatically implies a certain outcome, or a certain cause, rather.
Sure.
So I'm glad we got that disclaimer out there, guys, because this is a serious problem. As Matt said, you can go to forums to talk with other people who've experienced this, and many people will have different explanations for the causes, but
I'm sure there are different versions of the experience,
sure,
too. I mean, we're kind of talking about a specific one that was portrayed very chillingly in this film, The Nightmare. But you have to imagine, as many people as there are out there that have these experiences, there have to be lots of different variations.
Yeah, there are a ton. It's always slightly different, and it's usually, most of the time, just this dark being or beings.
Or the sensation of one.
Yes.
And that's kind of why I, at the very top of the podcast, just to circle back, I mentioned my, recurring dream or nightmare. See, the thing is, at this age, I almost don't even think about things as nightmares anymore. Because they don't scare me. It's just a sense that I'm left with that is, it can be a positive thing. Like I said, feeling my size and feeling the insignificance of, me in relation to the machinations of the universe and larger beings and things like that. So, I mean, to me, the thing that I'm experiencing is as much an apparition as one of these shadow people. It's just kind of like it represents something. At least that's the way I interpret it. It represents whether it's a lack of something, lack of confidence, or, some sort of thing that is difficult to deal with. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how, I look at it.
That was well said. I think that's an even-handed, fair way to look at it, and we would like to hear what you think. So write to us directly, or find us on the internet. And just to show you that we actually do read listener mail, do you guys want to do some?
Absolutely. I've got one right here. This mail comes to us from Matt. Matt is very generous with his compliments. He says he's listening to the Halloween special podcast. He wanted to share a somewhat similar experience he had last year.
I saw this one.
Oh, excellent. Albeit his story doesn't involve ghosts or anything bad happening.
So here it is. Let's see. At this point in time, I'd been renting a house with my wife in central Pennsylvania for going on 3 years. The house was in a quiet community, and we felt a sense of security I imagine anyone living in the suburbs normally feels. One week in the middle of the summer, while I was away on business, our central air went out. My wife called the landlord to have it fixed, as it gets pretty toasty in Pennsylvania during the summer months. The landlord had the HVAC guy call my wife and ask when she would be home. My wife responded that she wouldn't be home till around 6 p.m. The HVAC guy said he had a local job in the area, but didn't know if he could hang around that long. He told my wife he'd see if he could troubleshoot the problem from outside, and told my wife to call him if it had been a success. So my wife got off work and went home to find a work van outside our house, but the HVAC guy was nowhere to be seen. She walked to the front door of our house to find that the door had been unlocked. She opened the door to find the HVAC guy standing in our living room. Obviously startled, she asked the man how he got inside. He replied, "Oh, well, a lot of landlords keep spare keys on top of the electric meters for maintenance people. I looked and found a key to your house sitting there. Sorry to startle you." It goes without saying, my wife felt a mixture of terror and anger that this man took the liberty to get inside our home without our permission. It equally freaked us out that we had a spare key outside our home for 2 years that we had no idea about. After my wife told me this, I immediately called the landlord and asked for our locks to be changed, as it is entirely possible another key could exist without our knowledge. We live in the same house to this day, but it still freaks me out knowing how vulnerable we were. A word of advice to anyone renting a house: check with your landlord to see if they have a spare key stashed around the property. Anyway, that was my experience with finding maintenance people creepily waiting inside my home. Thank you for producing a great show, and I look forward to future episodes.
Wow.
I think that hits on the theme of the episode. I mean, just this, you know, you've heard the expression safe as houses.
Right.
Right?
Right.
That doesn't apply anymore, you know? It just doesn't. But the thing is that we feel safe in our home, just naturally. You want to, at least, because you've got, you're walled in. It's like your fortress. But there are so many things that we take for granted, like a maintenance person, like a spare key, like having a landlord that is in control of our locks and has extra keys that could be hanging around without our knowledge.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like I said in the episode, I don't want people to be paranoid and live in fear of, you know, being invaded or something like that. But, you know, these things are an issue. You have to, like, be aware of your surroundings.
So thank you, Matt, for writing in, again, for being very kind, and for sharing a pretty disturbing real-life version of, you know, kind of the story that we read.
Which
that
could have
may
been
have
real
just
life.
Been a story, who knows?
Yeah.
But that's a real-world example. Yikes.
We have one more listener mail before we head out today, and that is from our friend Mike N. And guys, Mike was writing in about our Highway of Tears episode. He says, "Hey, I recently found your podcast and have been spending hours a day catching up. I'm a truck driver, so there's been many miles that you've kept me company. Keep up the great work, and thanks for the thought-provoking topics. As a side note, on your podcast Highway of Tears and the one on serial killers, you talked about truckers being serial killers. Just know that most of us are hardworking family guys and gals who just want to deliver our goods and get home safely to our families. Mike." I think that's a good point, because we sort of said how rare serial killers are, but I think we should establish, because we do have a lot of truckers listening to the show as well, we should establish that the truckers are good people.
Absolutely.
You know,
even if they weren't listening to our show, they would still be awesome people because they get us things. I mean, that's the only way things happen to get other places is because truckers exist.
Right. Cargo ships and trucks and rail, truckers don't just drive rigs. In a very real way, they drive the economy.
Yeah, my buddy Charlie, who just moved back to upstate New York, his dad and a couple other guys, that they would get around and talk about, you know, what would happen if the trucker associations all decided to go on strike, and the people in the docks all decided to go on strike because, you know, of mistreatment or something.
Bad times.
Yeah, he was just talking about the real world effects of nothing getting shipped anywhere.
Take things for granted.
Take things for granted. But with that said, Mike, thanks so much for checking out the show. And you, yes, you as well, listening, thanks so much. We hope you enjoyed this topic. We'd love to hear a suggestion from you. Is there something we should cover in an upcoming episode, video or audio? You can let us know. You can let us know. Right? There's so many ways you can let us know. We're all over the Internet. We're lousy. The Internet is lousy with us.
Yes. Don't even search stuff they don't want you to know, because it'll probably break your computer. There's so many search results. What? No. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter, where we are Conspiracy Stuff. You can find us on Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, where you can almost very soon find pictures of Noel and Matt and Ben. And that'll be awesome when that happens. If not, if you don't want to do any of those things, if you just want to send us a message, you can find us. We are
conspiracy@howstuffworks.com. For more on this topic and other unexplained phenomena, visit youtube.com/conspiracystuff. You can also get in touch on Twitter at the handle @conspiracystuff.